So, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. We were wondering if you would speak to us on the subject of what it means to be a spiritual person.
Well, in hopes that I won't offend anyone, I think that the true hallmark of a spiritual person, deeply, deeply meant, is one who has understood one basic statement, which is this, that there is so much wonder and so much mystery and so much that is totally beyond the realm of your finite understanding that you have fallen into a space of wonder and gratitude and joy and acceptance. The difficulty with defining yourself as a spiritual person is that you make a list and you say, now, a spiritual person does not do this, and a spiritual person does do this. And then you spend years of your life trying to cram yourself into somebody else's definition of a spiritual person. Now, that's wonderful, because if you go through this for years and years, you finally come to the understanding that you have been trying for years to be whatever, holy, good, righteous, loving, compassionate, any of it. And if you have been honest, you will find that you have not been able to do so. That there are times when you are loving and compassionate, there are times when you are angry and resentful. There are times when you are filled with self-pity and times when you are feeling bold and strong and powerful. The lesson that you learn as you move through all of these different phases of your unfoldment should culminate at one point that says, it is beyond my ability to understand. It is beyond my ability to make any kind of mental and emotional sense of what I am going through. And the minute you can grasp that you cannot understand it with your mind, you fall into two things. Compassion. Why? Because you know that no one else can understand either. And therefore, there is no judgments. There is no one to say you are wrong and you are right. There is nothing but compassion because you see you have not been able to do it. How could you expect others to be able to do it? And at the same time, the total hopelessness. Do you remember a long time ago, some of you that have traveled with me for a long time, I have said, I like the state of hopelessness when you are without hope. Now, when I say that, people think I'm talking about a stooped over figure that is crotcheting along life's way, very, very remorseful and very confused and very dark, and that is not the picture at all. The picture of hopelessness is the person who has finally surrendered to the basic understanding that you cannot understand it. Don't you understand? The whole point is you cannot. You cannot make sense of it. You are crashing your brains trying to understand it. Someone hurts you, you crash your brain. Why? Is it karma? Have we been aligned in past lives? Is this why? How do you know? And what do you care? Does it really help your inside to know that you have gone through lifetimes with other people? I don't think in the last that it eases the pain in your heart. It eases the cracking of your mind. Your head perhaps hurts a little less because you've now made a reason. Oh, I see. There was nothing wrong with me. The reason this relationship went sour was because in a past life, I kicked this person and now it's this person's turn to kick me. Does this really ease you? Does it ease the heart? I don't think so. I think it eases the mind. Now, as soon as you have a rationale, yes, now I understand why it is, then you do this. You say, I understand, therefore I will forget about it. The minute the mind understands something, it forgets about it. Because now it understands. And I never have to deal with this again. I understand. My friend, if you will be very honest with yourselves, you will see that again and again people hurt you. If you really understood the basic statement that you could make within your heart, then you would never have to worry about people hurting you. And the statement is this. Everyone in my world everyone in the entirety of the world is seeking peace of heart. And I have two choices. I can aid in their peace of heart by understanding that when they hurt, they don't mean to. Do you understand, basically, no one really ever means to hurt anyone? It is not done out of hatred and venom and remorse. It is done out of, if I could use that word, ignorance. It is, you become ignorant when you try to understand things with your mind. You look at someone and you try to make sense of your relationship. You try to do relationship work with your children, with your parents, and so forth. And all of the time you're saying to yourself, I've got to be able to understand. If I could only understand, I wouldn't hurt. If you would understand one thing, you cannot understand. It is not that simple. You are not as simple as you would like to think. You are vast. I keep telling you, you are vast. You are incredibly, incredibly vast. If you are that vastness, will you explain to me how your little mind can understand why you are doing what you're doing? Can you explain why others do as they do? If you are that vast, you keep denying the vastness by saying, my mind has to understand it. So I say a spiritual person is one who has said, I have cracked my brain for however many years. I have done every yoga conceivable. I have gone through Zen. I have gone through self-realization. I have gone through, name them, whatever, infinite. And at the end, I am who I am. At the end, I am who I am. Maybe my health has improved, maybe my health hasn't. You know, some people follow vegetarian austerities and they become ill. Other people follow them and they become well. You know, there are no rules, you see. Once you get it through your mind, with absolute truth that there are no rules, you are trying to put rules on the vast infinite. Please, my friends, can you understand what a foolish enterprise that is? That is exactly like trying to stand on the edge of the sea and hold your hand up and say, no, no more waves. No more waves. I have understood what makes waves. You know, I understand what makes those waves crash on the shore. And I'm standing here to say, no more waves. It's impossible. It is impossible. And let me explain the wonder and how exciting that is. Please, follow me. If there was a secret formula, you know, whenever you get in touch with a deep spiritual teaching, one of the things that goes through the disciples' minds is, this guru, this master, this Roshi knows something that I don't know. He has some mystery. I know that he has a mystery. And if I only got good enough, if I only meditated long enough, if I only had enough austerities, if I only was surrendered enough, I know he would bring me the secret key to my unfoldment. Well, if that were true, I would like you to really entertain in your mind what kind of a trap would you have placed yourself in if that were true. Let us say that that is a true statement. Let us say that the Roshi knows and you do not, and he has the key and you do not. Who is in control then of your enlightenment, you or the Roshi? And what if the Roshi doesn't like you? What if the Roshi doesn't like the color shirts you wear? What if he doesn't like what you do on Saturday nights? What if he just doesn't like you at all? He can withhold this from you. Or if he happens to be a judgmental sort of fellow, he can say, you're not ready. Come back in another lifetime. How about three lifetimes? That's how long is it? Three lifetimes. Now, does that make you feel good? Does that make you feel strong, powerful? In control of your own awareness? I think not. But it is the supposition that you are going on. Then the next step is, no, I know, it's not the Roshi that has the secret, it's me. I have this key. Oh my God, I have this key, but I don't know where it is. How am I going to find this key? And then you go through the same thing with yourself. You say, oh, I know, I have to be more austere, I have to fast more, I have to meditate more, I have to chant more, whatever. And if I do all of these things, then I will give myself the key. Again, you are in an impossible position. You're asking yourself to tell yourself something that you're holding from yourself. Does that make any sense at all? To me, it does not. To me, you are again hopeless. Because I have people come to me and they say, I hear you say that I know, but I don't know. I don't know. I would like to address that we are talking about the wrong problem. The problem is not that you don't know. The problem is that you think that there is something to find. That you think that there is something other than this moment that you need. You keep thinking that there's something that you're missing. Something that you need that you do not have. If you continue thinking like that, which I call linear thought, you will go on for lifetimes. It is only when you admit with all of the honesty, and this is where egolessness comes in. Ego says, oh, yes, you do know. Oh, yes, you really know. And next week on Thursday, I'll tell you. Or, no, for you, you're such a terrible sinner. I mean, think of all those Saturday night parties. No, you're such a sinner. We'll wait 3 years, and then I will tell you. Always ego is saying, oh, don't worry. It's just around the corner. Hang on. Don't be upset. Someone will come and tell you. Some enlightened, wonderful person will come and prattle, and you will be realized. As long as you think like that, you will not find. Because that makes you a seeker. And as we've said before, you are either a seeker or you are a finder. And seekers keep seeking, and finders say, and this is, I think, the only mystery that I would like to talk about, I cannot understand it. I do not need to understand it. I can only live it. I say to you again and again, this is it. This experience of moment-to-moment life is it. It's not going to get better, my friends. Could you please understand? The greatest gift that you could give yourself is to say, it's not going to get better. This is the face of the divine. This. If you keep waiting for a future time, you are just continuing to create more and more faces, more and more tomorrows, more and more some days. This day is every day, and this day is all of the days. This day is it. To the extent to which you can stop seeking and to say, I cannot crack my brain anymore. I cannot discipline my body anymore. I have done all that I can. I have tried as hard as I know how. I am helpless. The minute you say that and mean it, ego has died. Do you understand? Ego dies then. It is ego that has set up the game of finding. And it is ego that dies when you say, I can't do it. Not, I can't do it, but. I can't do it, what? Just, I can't do it. The minute that understanding moves into your consciousness, ego, which you don't understand at all, ceases to have power, ceases to motivate you, ceases to move you through the paces of your life. It just lays down and surrenders. In truth, ego never dies, but let's not discuss that, but it's the truth. It just lays down and surrenders. The best game ego has is the spiritual game. It's incredibly powerful. Because it makes you superior to everyone around you. You are better than they are. Why? Well, because you're seeking God. And everyone knows that to seek God is the highest good. So you seek God and you seek God and you get bigger and bigger and you feel more and more powerful, stronger and stronger and wiser, more and more holy, until finally you find people around you can't stand you. You're so holy that your very presence makes them sick. And it is because you have filled yourself with poison ideas. Ideas that say again and again to you and to those people around you, oh, please, are you sure you want that glass of wine? I'm sure you'd be much more holy if you didn't. Are you really sure that you want to go out this evening? I'm sure you'd be much more holy if you stayed here. I mean, on and endlessly making assessments and judgments. You have literature until you cannot believe it, that confirms the basic idea that there are no rules for anyone. Enlightenment happens when it happens, when it happens, when it happens, when it happens. If the rules worked, many of you in this room would already be enlightened, if the rules worked. But they don't work. They are built on one man or one woman's enlightenment. And they say, oh, you did it. How did you do it? And so out of this vast, amazing event, they write tomes and tomes about how it happened and how other people should follow and what you should do and so on and so forth. And the person themselves who has had this experience knows when they're speaking that they are not really speaking the truth, because the truth can't be spoken. So they do the best they can with the words, and the minute the words go out, then down they go in writing, and then for thousands of years people look at that and say, that's how you do it. Some of you have been doing this for thousands of years. Isn't that depressing? Again and again and yet again. And the only depressing thing is that if you continue to have this idea that God is something other than you doing whatever it is you're doing this moment, that there will be another thousands of years. Please look at the people who try to be virtuous. It is an incredibly difficult struggle. And the main hallmark of people trying to be virtuous is they don't have any fun. Do you know that? They don't have any fun. And that kind of an idea has grown up for hundreds and hundreds of years, that if you're going to seek God, you've got to quit having fun, because after all, God doesn't know anything about fun. You know, it's just clear. How could God know anything about fun? Oh, you know, it's just not within his territory. There is a sign on someone's home that said, a sign of the presence of God is the presence of joy. I think it's more important than we think. Remember this, please. When you begin to move into that space within you that tells you that you're doing fine, oh, you're moving along the path, oh, things are getting, oh, you're in control. You know, you've got your diet under control. Your desires are at a low ebb. You know, only think about them occasionally. Your life is at a rather, you know, calm plateau. And you begin to feel righteous, and you feel powerful, and you feel superior. That, to me, is the time to say something is very wrong. If you can make sense of your life, then you are using your mind. Life has no sense to it. Haven't you figured that out yet? Life is not this wonderful machine that goes into operation and then relentlessly moves on for hundreds of years following laws that your little minds have made up. That isn't the way it goes. Again and again, you hear God is spontaneous, creative, dynamic motion. If it is this machine that moves on relentlessly following laws, could you tell me where the spontaneity comes in that? If you have this idea in mind, then you are forgetting the basic substance of life, which is the greatest joy in life comes in the spontaneous movement to whatever is happening now. In that kind of movement comes freedom. Then you stop judging yourself. Do you understand what I'm trying to tell you? If you stop trying to become whatever it is you're trying to become, if you start saying, I am as I am, and that's that, and this is the moment, your struggle stops. And I know that some of you are afraid to have your struggle stop, because if the struggle stops, then how are you going to get enlightened? Do you see the paradox in the mind? How are you going to get enlightened? How? The problem is that you've addressed the wrong subject. You know, Maharshi says, you are already enlightened. You say, oh yes, good, 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 good. You don't believe it. You put it on hold over here somewhere. Oh, well, someday I'll think about that. You don't believe it. Ramana says, the only obstacle to your enlightenment is the thought that you are not enlightened. You think, oh yes, good, 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 good. And you stick it over here. Either he is a fool prattling lies, or he's speaking the truth. You decide. And if you decide he is speaking truth, then would you please believe him when he says that the greatest and only obstacle to your enlightenment is the thought that you are not already enlightened? Believe him or do not. But do not halfway believe him. You see, halfwayness. You see, you read these things and you select out of them. You say, oh, I believe that and I reject that. Who do you think is accepting and rejecting when you read something like Ramana Maharshi? Is it not this wonderful thing called the mind, ego, body that goes through and says, all right, I can accept that and I will reject that, continually going through these motions? I think the basic question is, how many of you are addicted to seeing yourself as spiritual seekers? I repeat, how many of you are addicted to seeing yourself as spiritual seekers? If you look carefully at that one statement, you will find that your option of thinking yourself a spiritual seeker, no matter how cleverly you disguise it, is the basic key for your ego's one-upsmanship on every other person in the world. A spiritual seeker is at the top of the pile. Everybody knows that. Many people play this game to feel better about themselves. Oftentimes, people who have failed in many parts of their life turn to the spiritual world thinking, well, I've made a mess of the earth plane, but at least I can do something on the other planes. Well, unfortunately, the earth plane and the other planes are one. You cannot jump over the earth plane and sit on clouds in a different state of consciousness. The way to vaster states of understanding is total, utter acceptance of this plane exactly as it is. And you exactly as you are. And your neighbor exactly as they are. And to love your neighbor as yourself. You cannot love your neighbor if you have one iota of feeling of superiority in you. Then it is called condescension. It is not love. How do you love? It's so simple. You simply say, I cannot follow rules. I can only do the best that I can do. I can only arise every morning and say, all right, you guys, I'm going to do my best to just do whatever is before me to do. And everybody I see, I'm just going to be there with them. And I'm going to do what it is I do. And I'm going to say what I say. And I'm going to feel what I feel. I'm going to be myself this day. I'm just going to be myself this day. And if you would quit trying so hard, my friends, you're going to quit being so hard on yourself. And then you're going to quit being so hard on others. People that are hard on other people are hard on them because they're hard on themselves. They are not meeting their own standard. And so in an effort to feel all right, they have to find the world outside of them substandard. Do you follow me? Please understand this. Someone who finds the world substandard finds people negative, judgmental, evil, whatever, undisciplined, all of the words. That kind of a person is one who has found themselves lacking in their own standard. And therefore, in order to feel all right about each day, projects out a world that is less than them. Do you understand? You can't stand the thought that you're not all right. And the way to make you feel all right is to make the world out there less than you. And then you feel better. Endlessly this goes on. That is not the answer. That is not the answer. If you think that this world was created out of a substance that was non-divine, then you and I have nothing to say to each other. But if you believe that this world was created and is still creating and sustained by what you call divine power, then you must make the next statement in your mind, which is, if this was God's doing, then let's do it. Then let's do it. Then let's do it. Are there two of you? Is there God and the devil? Is that what's really going on? Do you see how it goes back to those old ideas? Do you know how those old ideas started? Very simple. A bunch of humans got together and said, this spontaneous living is all right, but it's not very predictable. And I think we ought to have a little bit more predictability going on around here. So let's make some rules. And if we make some rules, then we will be predictable. And predictability means you set in motion what has begun eons ago, this quest of what are those things that we can say so that people will be predictable, therefore not give me any trouble. You know why you like predictability? It doesn't give you any trouble. Unpredictable people are a pain because they keep changing on you. And you can't be, you can't count on them. And you use such words as, you're not dependable. You're not reliable. You're not responsible. All that you're saying is, you are inconvenient to me because I go along with a certain set in my mind and lo and behold, you change. And that's terrible. And then the other person says, well, why is change so terrible? And if you were honest, you'd say, because it's inconvenient for me. I had it all figured out and now you've moved off center and now I have to change. I have to do a change here. I don't like it. Get back over here. Pull, pull, pull. And if you're really smart, you'll throw in all those great cosmic laws that you've created. You have to be responsible. You have to be reliable. You have to be, you have to be, you have to be. And down the list they go. Down to the, do you realize how regimented your life is? You even have to decide what to eat and what not to eat. You have to decide when to breathe and how to breathe and when to breathe and how not to breathe. You have to decide what to think and what not to think. How are you going to do that, my friends? How are you going to think what to think and not to think? What a tremendous job you've set out for yourself. And it's all humbug. It's all humbug. You keep forgetting the basic premise, which is it is all divine. If it is all divine, then where is your preference? Then where is your preference? But you see, you don't believe that it's all divine. Inside, this wonderful institution called church has taught you that there is such a thing as evil. And evil is something to fight against day and night, relentlessly. I do not see evil. I do not believe in evil. I believe in fear. And it is fear that makes people act in ways that are not loving to other people. There is no one that is born that does not have love in them. Not one. Not one. But fear clouds it and says, I can't be loving. If I'm loving, I'm going to be vulnerable. And if I'm vulnerable, somebody's going to hurt me. And if I'm hurt, I'm going to hurt. That's right. If you can just accept that hurting is hurting and that's that, and not spend all of your lives trying to get away from hurting, you're going to find that your world changes entirely. Let it hurt you. Are any of you dead? All of you have been hurt. Endlessly hurt. And look at you, you're still here. You're still alive and doing well. What has it done to you, this terrible thing? What has it done to you, this terrible thing? I don't think it's been so bad. I don't think it's been so bad. The thing that you're running from is a phantom. So let people say things that are bad about you or to you or whatever. Does it really matter? Does it really matter? I would like to have you test that theory. Let us say that you are living in New York and a friend is living in Los Angeles. And this friend thinks a terrible thought about you, and you're not aware of it. You go along for weeks, happy, delightful, in tremendous state of openness. And then a telephone call comes from a friend in New York, says, I'd like to tell you the thing that so-and-so said about you. And they tell you this thing. And you fall into anger, depression, self-pity, remorse, guilt, anguish. Now, if that first statement really had the power to do that to you, it would have done it in all of those weeks. You would have been all of those things the minute it was uttered. And please don't give me this malarkey about the thoughts going through and over the universe are going to impinge on you with such terrible pain and power. You are not so helpless. Do you have this idea that you are just some kind of a vulnerable sponge and someone in New York can say, you really are a jerk and this is going to move through the ethers? Do you know there are not very many people with the power to move their thoughts through those ethers? You're giving people power that they do not possess. So if the first person's statement really had all of this power, you would have been all of those things in all of those weeks. The fact is, it didn't touch you at all. It did not touch you at all. Now, it may have touched the person that said them. I will grant you that. But we're not talking about that, are we? We're talking about you feeling vulnerable from other people. The only time you became anything other than joyful was when it came to your ears directly, and now you say, oh my goodness. And then the face of ego rises up and all of the ramifications move relentlessly onward. Let me tell you something, my friend. At that very moment when you hear it, you have a choice. You can say, uh-huh, all right, and drop it. Or you can play out the dramatic role, enjoying every moment of it, boldly. Doesn't matter. If you like to feel depressed and dejected and guilty, fine, go ahead, do it. Do it boldly. Do it with verve, with vigor, with vitality. Be real about it. But you have a choice. To say that you have no choice in all of this is where I find the difficulty. Is it too warm? Would you open? I just repeat. The thought that you are choiceless is what makes you vulnerable. I repeat, the thought that you are choiceless is what makes you vulnerable. If you could once see that you are totally filled with choice every instant, then things change. It is not the events that undermine you. It is your response to them. You've heard this until you're all sick. But if you really had heard it with all your being, then you would understand. It is not the events. It is your response to them. Because if it was the event, back to my first analogy, the minute those words were spoken in New York, you would have felt the repercussions. But it is not so. It is only your response that moves inexorably toward the end. The thing that I would ask you to do is to become awakened. Do you understand? You all say, look, when I ask you, what do you want? What does self-illumination mean to you? It says, I'm in a state of feeling of oneness with everything around me. I have a feeling of joy and compassion and life. I feel alive. That's what I want. All those things, peace. So on. I would like you to ask yourselves, what is it that is keeping that from you now? And your answer would be, if you were looking really carefully, it is your thoughts. It is your thoughts relentlessly going on. Fear of past, guilt, remorse, fear of future, loneliness, isolation, illness, whatever. You're caught and you move between these two poles, back and forth. If that were not there, what would be your state? What would be your state if that was not quite right? Why do they yell at you until you are screaming out in rebellion? Everyone says the same thing. Still the mind. So you go through all these austerities. Do you know something? You don't have to go through austerities to still your mind. Do you know what you have to do? You have to still your mind. And that is all you have to do, is to still your mind. And the best way to still your mind is in the moment. To be in the moment. You cannot be in your agitation of mind if you are in this moment. I defy you to do it. If you are alive to this moment, how you feel, what's going on, the wonder of everything, if you are here boldly, you are not thinking about the future or remorsing over the past. You are here. So dynamically here that, my God, heaven help us, you start to feel good. And that's terrible. Do you know what an ethic you have in your culture about not feeling good? You start feeling good about yourself and your mother says, now look, don't you get on your high horse. Now look, don't you start thinking too much of yourself, you know, young lady, young man. Always on the verge. You find a child that says, I'm good at that. Everybody says, now dear, meaning, what, let's not be too bold about it. And the child is good at it. Early on, you learn that to voice to yourself and to others that you are good in something, that you are alive in something, that you're competent in something, that you're working well in something, immediately, you're suspect. Oh, arrogance. Oh, that child is so arrogant. Oh, my dear. You know, a child that's beautiful says, I'm beautiful. Everybody says, oh, that's terrible. Well, of course she's beautiful. The child should be able to observe, if she's got any eyes at all, that she's beautiful. She looks around. She sees other faces. She says, mine's better. And it probably is. And so, instead of being able to say, fine, go ahead and think you're beautiful. So what? You see, this horrible feeling of not, I cannot ever state to myself my strengths. And heaven help me, I cannot state them to other people. Where are you going to get yourself of strength then? Your sense of strength. Where? If you are not allowed to think it, and if the world is not going to give it to you because they don't want you to get too uppity, all uppity means is, you think you're better than me. That's all uppity means. You're saying things that make me feel like you're better than I am. If someone says they're beautiful or they're intelligent, someone with a very good mind says I'm intelligent, the other person thinks, oh dear, they probably are more intelligent than I am. And so instead of saying you're right, that makes me feel bad, I'd like to be smarter, they say, don't be so arrogant. All along through your life, watch children, it starts early. Not allowing. Where are you going to get yourself sense of deep self? If the world cannot give it to you and you cannot give it to yourself, you're relentlessly hard on each other and on yourselves. Relentlessly. When you admit to yourself that no matter how hard you try, that no matter what you do, you are going to be who you are, that you do not have the power within you to make all of these changes. When you sit in the feeling of being that, accepting completely and utterly who you are, not subject to change, not subject to change, pitter-patter up the ladder is not going to do it for you. Because there are always more rungs to the ladder. The minute that you accept that, then the irony of all things, something changes. But that something does not change out of you. That something does not change out of you. You accept yourself, your life, your world, your universe, everyone and everything and every component in it. And all of a sudden, all of that energy that you have been storing for years, do you know how much energy you have been storing for years trying to make yourself all right? Trying to make yourself feel at ease in this world? Do you know how much energy you spend trying to feel acceptable? The minute you release that, something happens. But until you release that energy, you will just continue remorselessly through all the paces. Why do some of these austerities work? You go to a Zen retreat and you bang your head against the wall of your koan for weeks and weeks and months and months. And finally you say, oh, forget it. It's happened. You beat yourselves against the walls of your life long enough, my friends, and you finally are going to say, forget it. And in that moment, things happen. People keep saying, you're all right the way you are. But I don't think many of you believe it. But I would like to just state one last thing on this subject, which is this. If the divine is the power that creates all, then would you please try to entertain one thought, which is this. If the divine has created and maintains and sustains my life, then maybe, just maybe, it is all right exactly the way it is. And that somehow, unknown to all of you, you are weaving an incredibly vast and beautiful tapestry. Interwoven, again and again, lifetime upon lifetime, the millions of you, an incredibly beautiful tapestry. And it is not really possible for you to view that tapestry from your limited consciousness. But I would like to just say one thing, which is this. There will come a time in each one of your understanding, either in a body form or out, where you will have removed yourself far enough in detachment from this tapestry to be able to see what you have created, all of you together. And if you remember those lines, God looked upon his work and he found it good. I will tell you this. As difficult as that might seem for some of you right now, in the midst of the life as you are weaving it today, there will come a day when you are detached enough from the tapestry to have seen the incredible work, the incredible wonder of the tapestry that you are all weaving together. And you will find it good. And you will. And you will. And you will not say, ah, that was a wrong stitch. That was a wrong move. You will say, no. It is all beautiful, just the way it is. You are building a tapestry of movement, of light. That is what your life is all about. Those of you who have sat in deep, intensive sweat lodges and seen the movement of energy, the threads that move between, those of you who have had experiences outside of body and so forth, you know that there are light paths that move, undulate, weave. What do you think they're doing? They're weaving an incredibly beautiful tapestry. Alive, dynamic, deep, full, totally wonderful. But because you are so close to it, because you are weaving your own strand, you cannot see the boldness of it. You cannot see the wonder of it. And when you do see it, you will not have wanted to change one line, one instant. One moment, one response, you will see that it was all absolutely perfect, exactly as it is. If you could get this feeling within you as your days go on, that that's what you're doing, is weaving this immense, vast, beautiful thing out of power and light. If you could only know that, even a small increment as you move about your day, you're going to get into the feeling of the wonder, of the joy, of the beauty of being a part of that. You're all part of it, don't you understand? You're all part of this immense thing. And it's beautiful. Try to sense that, will you please? Are there any questions?
I have a question. If I'm to give up the view I have of myself as a seeker, it seems to me I'll have to stand here and look back on my life and say I have learned absolutely nothing that has made me wiser, more capable, or more spiritual. And my ego won't let me do that.
Yes. The only hope for that kind of situation, and I think all of you, if you look deeply enough, will find yourself in the same position as Mr. Moore. Is, and this is a difficult kind of thing to talk about, but I would like to ask as a remedy for that, that you try to begin to live each day, each moment, out of this new idea. You see, you started living long, 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 long years ago out of the old idea of having to pull yourself up by the bootstraps, make your own way, be self-reliant, take care of yourself. All of these concepts have been built in for lifetimes. And I'm only asking that if within yourself you can turn just a small increment away from that and hold in your mind the possibility that what I have said may be right, that in this moment then you can begin to stay in the moment for a long enough period of time, my friend, that something moves in. Do you understand? What's going to happen if you live in the moment is that you are going to move into your power center. You cannot move in power unless you're in the moment. If you just try living in the moment, in whatever way that means to you right now, then the power begins to build in a different kind of a way around you. And then you'll find with increasing numbers of minutes and then hours and then days that those old thought forms are not alive so much, that you don't have to struggle so hard, that you don't have to be impressive, that you don't have to be wise, that you know, all of those old things start to lose their grip on you. And you find yourself more and more happy, if I could use that word, joyful, in the moment of life as it's unfolding. And the only way to do it is to do it. You cannot unthink things. All you can do is stay so powerfully aware in the moment that a new force begins to impress itself deeply upon you, just as the old force has impressed itself on you for a long time. Now, the question might arise, if it's taken us lifetimes to build these, is it going to take lifetimes to unbuild them? No. When you begin to build the power around you by staying in the moment, by letting go, by not indulging thought, by not future and past orienting yourself, by just staying alive in the moment, what comes out of that inexplicably and without anything out of you, your own workings, there comes another power. Another, if I could put it, view, another sense. And the more you do this, my friend, the less grasp, the less tightening of the grasp of all the past things that you've understood. Do you understand? It's only when the new takes over that the old drops away. In your own life, is this not true? When the old is finally gone, it's because the new has boldly brought itself into your life. And when that is true, then the old seems like a phantom somewhere that you can recall. In the power of the moment, all things are possible. You see, when you stay in the moment and begin to feel the power of who you are, you're going to see, here we go again, but you're going to see that you have misidentified yourself. You have identified yourself with this small body-mind walking through time-space. And all of those rules apply to that small mind, body, through time, space, Mr. Moore. Make no mistake. But that isn't who you are. That is only a small fragment of who you are. And in the moment, in the power of the moment, comes the dawning of that kind of true vision, which is, that's not who I am. That's really not who I am. And then all of those rules and all of those needs and all of those desires take a very pale second to the power of who you really are. If this day is going to mean anything to anyone, it has got to go beyond conceptualization and idea and move into practice. And the only practice that I really recommend is to shut up and stay in the moment. And by shut up, I mean stop the past and future from flooding in on you. Just stay alive, dynamic, in the moment. Seeing the moment. See it. Would you all please open your eyes and look at this moment? This is a moment. And it's beautiful. If you would just keep awake and alive and looking at the moment. You see a face that you've seen for years, and you think you know it well. You don't know it at all. It is rebuilt, removed, rechanged every moment. If you would just start looking in the moment over and over again, you will be alive to color, to sound, to all of those things. It becomes so bold. When you're totally here, it is so bold. It is so bold. The snow will blind you. The sparkles will inundate you. But you say, oh, I've seen snow. Oh, I've seen her. Oh, I know all about him. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. You become bored because you think you know, and you don't know anything. And the reason you don't know anything is because every moment it's new. How can you know something that's new every moment? Life becomes exciting and alive and bold if you understand that you know nothing. And that makes each moment something to learn about, something to feel about, something to experience about. You know, if you've seen one drunk, you've seen them all. That's not true. You look at one, you look at the face, something is there, something real, changeable, exciting, creative. In this moment, all is new, ever new. And that's where the joy of life comes. Do you see? Without that, life is terribly dull. Someone who is old, in their 80s, say, feels that their life is worthless. That's not true. Every moment of being in the moment is new. Every moment for them could be equally new. But their concept is, I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I can't act in this, and so on. So they consider themselves finished. They're not finished. The snow is still there. The sky is still there. Faces are still there. People are still there. Life is still there. And if life is there, it's still new. It's not old. It's not finished. It's just as new and young as it was the instant they were born. But your mind tells you differently. Just stay in the moment, and you'll begin to understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.